On this week's show, in the news, local officials across Texas working to defend free handouts to abortion providers. It's also one step forward, two steps back on property tax reform in the legislature. And we'll hear about how the House is responding to leftist violence on college campuses. In our interview, we talked to Luke Macias, Republican political consultant, about what we can expect in 2020 if the legislature moves forward on a sales tax increase. And we'll finish up with a commentary from Tony Ortiz on why you might just want to embrace the label. Coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas, this is Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. You can find us on the internet, www.texasscorecard.com. Also, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Spotify. Get started with this week's news that you as a taxpayer need to know. We'll start out with Jacob Asmussen, the Central Texas Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. Local elected officials all over the state uniting to lobby the Texas legislature against laws that would restrict their opportunity and ability to give free stuff to abortion providers.
That's right, Tony. This story is really baffling. You got three dozen local officials from across the state. They sent this joint letter to Texas House Speaker Dennis Bond and basically pleading for him to let them continue giving citizens money to help kill babies.
Yeah, so Senate Bill 22 is the bill they're concerned about. Tell us a little bit about what that does.
Yeah, so this bill would prohibit local governments, cities, counties, from using citizens' money to give it to abortion organizations, such as Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, so this has actually come up in the context, I think the most prominent situation is in Austin, where the city owns some property and is then giving that away to Planned Parenthood for one of their clinics.
That's right. Actually, ever since 1972, the Austin City Council has given a sweetheart deal to Planned Parenthood. They're giving them a special $1 a year land lease for one of Planned Parenthood's clinics near downtown Austin.
Yeah, so this is downtown or near downtown real estate that has some kind of value,
right?
And they're giving it away. Aren't there some other providers, non-abortion providing clinics that do the same kind of work that they say they want Planned Parenthood to be doing?
Exactly. And actually, in Austin's case, there was a other legitimate health clinic that offered to pay full price for this land. But Austin City Council rejected that offer and instead gave the sweetheart deal to an abortion provider.
Yeah, so basically this is a political thing for these city councils and local governments who want to give special benefits to Planned Parenthood because they support them as an abortion provider and what they do. Tell us, you know, listeners out there going, hey, you know, is my mayor on this list? Is my county commissioner on this list? So run through real quick who actually is on the letter supporting these free giveaways to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, Tony, you got three dozen officials, including Austin Mayor Steve Adler, a Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner, San Antonio Mayor Ron Nirenberg, and then you got all kinds of county officials. You got Travis County officials, Travis County Judge Sarah Eckhart. You got Tarrant County, Dallas City Council, Austin City Council members, San Antonio City Council, so El Paso City Council. So you got all over.
Okay, so basically three dozen. So folks need to go if you want to find out the specifics. If the name wasn't listed there, go to TexasScorecard.com. You've got your article up about it, and they can check it out there, and they can say, okay, is my county commissioner, is my city official fighting against the legislature saying, hey, I want to give free stuff to Planned Parenthood?
Absolutely, Tony.
Now let's turn to Destin Sinsky, Capitol correspondent for Texas Scorecard. Senate Bill 2, the big property tax reform bill in the Texas legislature, passing the Texas House of Representatives this week.
Mm-hmm.
Can taxpayers pop the champagne and celebrate now, or should they wait?
They should definitely wait. I wouldn't hold my breath if I were them.
All right, let's unpack this. So this is good progress for a bill that does some good things for taxpayers. But
right. So I've joked that the house has the best looking date at the prom, right? And they're at the dance and they're dancing off to the side with their buddies like dorks instead. But finally, you know, they decide they're going to go and dance with their good looking date that everybody wanted to take, and that's property tax reform. And so they pass a bill. It's mostly still intact from what came from the Senate, which was
steps in the right direction. Remind people real briefly what this bill does. It's a property tax reform bill.
Right. So it takes the rollback rate from 8 to 3.5%. Now, the Senate version was 2.5%, so that was a little bit of a difference that they'll work out in conference committee. But mostly, that is still an improvement on 4%, which was soundly rejected last session and in the special session two summers ago.
Yeah. So basically, in other words, if local governments decide to raise the effective property tax rate on property taxpayers over 3.5%, they've got to go get voter approval.
Right, with the exception of a couple of special taxing entities, sure.
And there are some exceptions that are kind of problematic. But overall, it does some good things for taxpayers from a reform standpoint. The challenge, the problem here, this thing, they're linking it. It's like a hostage taking deal. We won't pass this bill. This bill really doesn't pass unless you pass this other bill.
That's right. So Speaker Bonin's team, his leadership team, including Ways and Means Committee Chairman Dustin Burrows, they've essentially handcuffed this bill to school finance reform. They said no transparency, no reform, nothing is happening unless we pass what is essentially a bloated spending bill. House Bill 3. We're calling it school finance reform. It's not much reform at all in most conservatives' opinions, having looked at the bill. And that bill right now has a contingency clause of its own in it as well.
Yeah.
We just saw the committee sub for that bill come through the Senate Education Committee Chairman Larry Taylor. So
they're linking it to this proposal to say, hey, we're going to increase the sales tax to then do some kind of property tax buy down. Lots of problems. So we've actually now had this daisy chain connection of, hey, property tax reform efforts are linked to the school spending spree, which is linked to the sales tax increase, and we've got to pass all this stuff or none of it becomes effective.
So basically, you need two-thirds of either chamber to approve the sales tax increase. And so for the past week or two, they've been kind of talking about this. How are we going to get two-thirds of these finicky chambers on board ahead of an election, you know, with some serious consequences on the line. And so what they've decided to do is build this big house of cards, tie everything together, and basically give voters, the choice of you want increased sales tax and property tax relief, or, you know, we're going to send you the bill for both, you know, I mean, the difference. And so it's kind of an interesting approach. And I think there's a lot of concern in the Capitol among conservatives and liberals alike, because, you know, basically you have the outer parts of both parties looking in and saying, whoa, let's take a look.
I don't like elements of this part, or I don't like elements of this other thing.
There's something in it that everyone likes, and there's other parts that everyone doesn't. And so we'll kind of see what happens here in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, well, appreciate your report on it. Keep an eye on this. There's definitely more to come.
Absolutely.
Finally, let's turn to Brandon Waltons, Texas Scorecard's Capitol Bureau Chief. The Texas House is doing things correctly, at least on one issue, dealing with protecting free speech on college campuses.
Yeah, few and far between, but the Texas House actually taking action on protecting free speech on college campuses. Now, this is an issue we've seen pop up, especially in recent years, but it's been going on for a while. You have liberal activists, protesters, disrupting these conservative events on campus, be it just a group of conservative students out there doing some sort of demonstration.
Yeah, they're tabling for a meeting. They have a speaker in, what have you, all these things. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're getting wailed on by some leftists.
Or perhaps they invite a conservative speaker and the administration and other students shut the event down. We've seen this, you know, not just at the liberal universities like Berkeley, but you've seen it in Texas as well.
Yeah, in fact, this week there was an event over at the University of Texas disrupted by some leftist agitation.
Well, that was what was so interesting. I mean, the timing was perfect because just a few hours and a few blocks away from the Texas Capitol where they passed this legislation to protect free speech rights on campuses for students, you actually had an event by a conservative group, the Young Conservatives of Texas, that was actually disrupted by a smoke bomb, somebody who didn't like the speaker they had, didn't like
their event. It was a pro-life speaker.
Yeah.
So pro-life event. It's not, you know, people that go, well, what kind of Nazi is on campus? It's a pro-life event.
Just a pro-life event. Someone drops a smoke bomb, of course, costs someone to pull the fire alarm. Now, I did enjoy this, is that they quickly just relocated to another lecture hall and kept going. They didn't let the liberal protesters stop them in that
case. Sure. But this is the need for this bill. It's House Bill 2100.
House Bill 2100 by State Representative Briscoe Kane. Yes. Protects not only against administrations that want to stifle the free speech of their students on campus, but it also protects against issues like this with the heckler's veto, requires schools, universities to set in place processes to investigate these sorts of issues and to actually take disciplinary action.
Now, there were a bunch of bills this session that dealt with this issue. This is actually the most aggressive one.
Yeah, this is the strongest version of the bill, and for essentially this reason. It puts in place these causes of action so that students whose universities aren't protecting their rights, aren't following this, have the ability to actually file lawsuits against those universities and collect attorney's fees, those sorts of things.
Yeah, and so basically this one, as opposed to the others, if you're aggrieved, you can go hire a lawyer, file a lawsuit, get damages, get your attorney's fees back. And I mean, that's really at the end of the day how you actually protect these kind of free speech rights.
That's exactly right. Now the bill heads over to the Senate. They've got a couple weeks here, a few weeks of opportunity to pass it. And we'll see if students' rights are going to be protected at the end of this legislative session.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's my pleasure to welcome on the program this week Luke Macias, a Republican political consultant extraordinaire, I guess. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Tony.
So you went and testified recently in the legislature, and you were saying that you don't do this very often, actually testifying. But you went and testified before the legislature against this kind of phony sales tax for property tax swap, or seemingly phony sales tax for property tax swap. Some Republicans pushing this forward, some Democrats actually saying, no, this is bad. So find myself agreeing with the Democrats that it's bad.
Probably for different reasons.
Yeah, you have different reasons, sure.
Yes.
But you know, a bad idea is a bad idea.
Yep.
I joked the other day, the Texas legislature seems like it might be a bad idea factory. But what motivated you to come down and actually testify and get involved? And I want to kind of get into the political side of things. Like, how is this stuff going to play out if legislators move forward on these bad ideas? So tell us a little bit about what motivated you.
So it's a really interesting time we find ourselves in this legislative session. Beto O'Rourke got closer than any Democrat has statewide in a very long time.
That's right.
And that really caused the majority of Republicans to enter this legislative session being driven largely by fear.
Sure.
One of my pastors told me, not regarding this legislative session, but regarding a conversation he and I were having when I was in my teens about concerns and worries and anxiety that I had, that fear stands for false evidence appearing real. That's what it stands for. And And it seems like the majority of the Republicans that are governing this legislative session are being driven more by fear, and it causes some irrational reactions. And so they came into the legislative session saying, hey, we need to prioritize school finance reform. There have been some, I think, naive statements made. One of the things that people keep saying is the voters made it clear at the polls that school finance reform is something they really care about. And having been very active on campaigns all across the state.
True?
I mean, definitely did not witness none of the data that anybody looked at during the legislative session. The campaign season said that school finance reform was this top priority.
Let's be clear. I mean, so I've said this on the show a bunch. School finance reform means change. Change to what, right? So yep. Reform really doesn't tell you anything.
I just want to make sure it's real clear. It's not to say that people don't think that schools need to be properly funded. It's not to say that they don't think schools are a state responsibility. It's not to say that they don't think their property taxes are too high. These are all things that voters definitely feel.
Everybody agrees and concedes that our school funding formulas, school finance system is uber complicated to where people who work in and around the legislature for their whole lives can't figure it out and understand it because it's so bizarre and weird. Yep. That they'll concede is true. So Obviously voters are not concerned about tinkering around the things and the difference between golden and copper pennies and, all of these terms of art that's not what motivates voters.
But when you also peel the layers back, you realize that not only were they worried about, this one issue, but Republicans in general have viewed every single policy issue through the lens of what do suburban female voters think about this policy? And really, it's not even what they think, it's what do we think they will think?
Yeah, what do we assume
that they will
suburban female woman voter? I mean, it's actually this very cynical. It's like, oh, okay, these women are kind of, I think it's this vision of these aloof women who are impulsive and, don't think strategically about their families. That isn't true. I mean, voters vote on very rational grounds,
and they have in the past. And the reality is that, when people were motivated to come out and vote for Beto O'Rourke, he ran a very compelling campaign, and there was a large media bias behind pushing, him significantly. And Ted Cruz had an uphill battle and had issues.
Well, I ran a poor campaign, frankly.
Yeah, and had issues with likability and campaign tactics that were run. And so you have all these things converging. And yes, they did indeed. That combined with just the national wave that always happens against a sitting incumbent president, combined to the fact that in the suburban areas with female voters, Republicans struggled. But I think that our takeaway, when I say our, I just mean that the Republican Party leadership's takeaway was, okay, now let's sit down and view this whole legislative session. And so they started down a path. And they then found themselves midway through the session realizing, yes, they had found a way to give a lot more money to public education and in some reforms that were helpful and necessary. But then they kind of forgot about property tax relief. And they also found a way to spend money on a whole lot of other levels, right? So, sure. So they didn't just go down that path. They went down.
Oh, well, the budget is they're blowing the budget out of the water, like a 16% increase proposed on the House side.
Yes.
So big budget increases, spending all the money that they can with very little property tax relief.
Yep.
Property taxes, so people don't say out there, they may say, we need to take care of the schools. They don't say, well, I want school finance reform. I mean, that's not what people are saying at the doors. They are talking about the property taxes. Mm-hmm. That is a priority for them, right?
Absolutely. And that's what was interesting, because we were told for a long time, you can't do property tax relief without doing school finance reform. But the problem is, by mid-March, we had found out that you could find a way to do school finance reform without doing property tax relief. So, I mean, you can't do one without the other, but you can do the other without the one.
Something like that.
Similar to
so
that.
So, you go down, let's go to this swap proposal that's going on, which I think is a poorly planned and conceived idea. Why aren't you supporting it? I mean, obviously, I think conservatives come at it. They say the sales tax is a better tax than property taxes. I mean, I think we concur and agree on that. Why not raise the sales tax a little bit? Would people really care about another penny on their sales tax and do some property tax relief? I mean, you know, if it works, that kind of sounds like a good proposal, right?
It's really good to take a second to remind, I think, just conservative listeners that we do indeed prefer a sales tax over other taxing methods, right? So an income tax is less than ideal because you're really penalizing people's productivity, right? And then a property tax is problematic because, one, it's something that is going to continue to increase so the government can get more money, but you can't do anything about it. You have no control as an individual citizen.
And your property doesn't necessarily create any income for you to pay the tax. It's like one of the worst taxes.
It is. And it really, it disincentivizes home ownership. Some people would say it prevents the actual true existence of home ownership, because if you don't pay your taxes for a year or two, government can come in and take your home from you and all these other problems.
People say basically you never own. I mean, the governor even tweeted this out the other day. Twitter Governor Abbott is great sometimes. He really is. So Twitter Governor Abbott goes out and says, you know, if you have to pay property taxes on your home, you don't own your home. Yes, you got the principle there. So
it's good to remember. That's why we prefer a sales tax, right? Because the reality is that everyone pays it. It's something that individual citizens can control and all of that. The problem with the idea as it has been conceived is first of all, it's a reaction. And we should always remember when we're reacting to something, to our own faults, right? When we're reacting to a problem that we have created through our own fiscal irresponsibility with our budget, we are likely to have unintended consequences that come as a result of that reaction. And that's what they have, because they want to increase the sales tax to buy down property taxes. Their problem is that they need Democrat votes. And so in order to do, and they actually have two problems. One, they need Democrat votes. So you need to find a way to get Democrats to support this tax increase, which they generally don't because they see it as a regressive tax. And they actually need more money. They spent the budget surplus they had coming in. They have planned to spend the entire very generous revenue estimate that Glenn Hager gave them, and they are tapping the savings account for some ongoing expenses, and they need more money. I mean, and that's fundamentally one problem they have. And then the second problem they have is that they need Democrat votes. And so this has caused them to go down the path of saying, let's increase the sales tax. Let's take a percentage. Some have said 25%. Some have said 20%. Maybe it gets negotiated down. But they want to dedicate a percentage of that sales tax to more funding for public schools. And then they want to dedicate a percentage of that to buying down people's property taxes. The problem with that being, one, we're not at this point guaranteed a cap on property taxes. Right. And then even if we are guaranteed a cap on property taxes, if you are increasing the overall tax burden on Texans, it's a problem. And I know I have a limited amount of time here, but I almost get the feeling like at one point in time there was a meeting and some Republican policy analyst somewhere said, hey, is it taxes that Republican voters don't like, or is it just the property taxes that they don't like? You know? And people go, well, it's really just the property taxes. Okay, so
wrong answer.
So we could take more of their money, but take it the way they would prefer it taken from them.
Yeah, and when you get down to brass tacks, the answer is that's way wrong.
It's wrong.
Republican voters are opposed to their overall tax burden going up.
The citizens of the United States of America, as well as the citizens of Texas, know and believe they're overtaxed.
Yeah, they know. I mean, everybody just kind of knows that, agrees on it. So the problem I see with this swap idea is they've tried it before. They tried it in 2006 with the business margins tax, where they say, okay, we're going to raise taxes on businesses, and then we're going to dedicate the revenue from that to buying down property taxes. Yep. Well, what did you have? Well, two things happened. You increased taxes on business, though it got in less revenue than they expected. Yep. Okay, and it's been this huge pain and just paperwork pain for people who own businesses. The flip side of it is, okay, there was a momentary blip in property taxes, and then they just kept going up.
They did. And we got rid of that tax because it was a bad tax. To the legislators' credit, they are trying to cap taxes this session, and it seems like they are on both sides because they know that that has to be done. But at the same time, you know, this sales tax increase, I think, is ill-conceived. It's a reaction, and we need to recognize
the fact
that.
Let me ask you this. How would it go over with voters if you have what I would expect would be the result, a clear sales tax increase by Republicans, and a property tax something or other that's hard to measure and hard to see?
It's a good question. I mean, that's the other thing. I feel like conservatives—
Let's say it was one for one. They spent every penny of the thing, but it works the same mechanism they always have with the property tax. I mean, are voters just going to say, oh, well, Republicans increased our taxes?
The real question is, one, will voters actually trust the cap? Because, you know, they won't have actually experienced the cap. Even if we do pass a cap that's 2.5% on schools, 3.5% on cities and counties, I mean, at the point in time in which we're asking voters to vote on this in November, they won't have experienced the fact that their taxes are not actually going to continue to rise astronomically? And will they then trust that an increase would actually effectively buy it down permanently
and
sustainably?
But they will immediately experience that increase.
An increase in sales tax.
And they'll see it on large purchases and that sort of thing.
I think you're right.
We're running out of time. Before we finish, you also have a radio show, podcast that you do. Tell folks at home where they can connect with that. You do a lot of good stuff. You had a guest on recently. It was very good.
He was really insightful.
Tell folks, listeners at home, how do they connect with your show?
You can go to the Luke Macias Show on any of the platforms that you listen to podcasts on. You can go to lukemacias.com and give us your email. We'll email you the radio program, the podcast episode, every single week when we release it. We need more conservatives engaging and empowering other conservative activists in Texas with the information they need to make a change within our state. And if this legislative session is any testimony, we're in desperate need of more conservative activists. And I'm hoping that your program and my program and others can continue to engage these people.
That's right. Luke Macias Show. Luke Macias, thank you for being on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
What are you doing Sunday evening? With the Texas legislative session back in full swing, we're spending our Sundays making sure you are staying informed with Sunday Scorecard, a product of Texas Scorecard TV. Catch the Texas Scorecard team and guests every Sunday at 7:30 p.m. live on the Empower Texans Facebook page to hear the latest news from Austin, D.C., or even your local city governments. That's Sunday Scorecard, live, Sundays at 7:30 p.m. throughout the legislative session. You can find show archives and more information at texasscorecard.com. Join the conversation this Sunday evening.
When the left resorts to name-calling, it's usually best to ignore them. But Tony Ortiz argues in this week's Texas Scorecard radio commentary that sometimes you can have a lot more fun if you just embrace the label.
Labels are a tricky thing, and the left does a fantastic job of applying them to their enemies. But conservatives often respond to them in a panic, trying to prove that they're not racist or that they're smarter, that they're good people, all reacting to the labels that the left applies to them. I'm Tony Ortiz with this week's Texas Scorecard radio commentary. Whether it's being labeled a deplorable, a racist, a Nazi, or just plain mean and angry, the left loves to apply phony political labels to those they disagree with. Even if you're just a voter, that means someone, somewhere, has applied some kind of nasty label to you. What was your first response? Probably shock, denial, and defense. I'm not a racist. I'm not a Nazi. I love freedom. You probably felt the need to prove whatever label was applied to you wasn't true. Did your protest change the mind of the name callers? Probably not. And all you did in the end was waste time and energy allowing them to control the conversation. They won. Plain and simple. When decent people are attacked with nasty labels, you have two choices. Most often, you should just ignore it completely. Don't buy into the label. Focus instead on the ideas you are promoting. That's what's really important. When the left engages in name-calling, go prove you're not who they say they are by doubling down on your involvement in your community. Go out, meet your neighbors, be a leader, improve things. You'll quickly gain a reputation for results, not some angry leftist labels. On the other hand, sometimes it's more fun to simply embrace the label. And that's a great way to show you're not controlled by the left's name calling and to show how petty your opponents really are. We all remember in 2016 when Hillary Clinton referred to Trump's supporters as a basket of deplorables. Soon after, the Trump campaign and Trump supporters embraced the name and you saw people calling themselves proud deplorables. The name calling backfired and just exposed the disdain Hillary and her supporters had for the regular people. Just recently, I wrote about a candidate forum in Plano, Texas. There, one of the candidates dismissed his opponent as a part of a group commonly referred to as the angry crowd. His opponent's response, "I accept that. I'm angry about my high taxes. I'm angry about the traffic." He had embraced the label and won the crowd over. So oftentimes we get too caught up in name calling from the left. The left is king when it comes to identity politics, and it should come as to no surprise that they're very keen on labeling everyone to their advantage. My advice, ignore it or embrace it. Save yourself some time and energy, and maybe you'll even have a little fun at their expense. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Tony Ortiz.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's program. If you're enjoying the show as a podcast, go on to your favorite podcasting platforms, iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify. Go on there and give us a 5-star review. That helps us find other taxpayers who need to know the information we're providing. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, what are you waiting for? Go on and subscribe. Make sure that you never miss a program of Texas Scorecard Radio. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.